On today's episode of 23's The Mic, we have 23's The Take, our weekly debate episode. In this week, we go over our NFL quarter season awards with my friend, Yusuf Unwer. Let's go. Hey everybody, welcome into 23's The Mic. I'm joined today by my friend Yusuf Unwer, coming through from New York City, originally hailing from San Francisco, California. What's up, Yusuf?
How's it going, Nadeem? Appreciate you having me on the show.
Thanks for joining. So real quick, before we get into the festivities for today, we want to recap and touch upon the games from yesterday. We had two Monday night games for the first time since week one. One of the first times we've had two Monday night games outside of a week one, since I can remember. It started with the Chiefs and Patriots, and this was a pretty close game until about the fourth quarter. At halftime, the score was 6-3. It was pretty low scoring, defensive domination throughout. But Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs end up breaking away. Patrick Mahomes throws for 236 yards and two touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was pretty much held in check. I think the Chiefs as a whole were pretty much held in check compared to what happened last week against the Baltimore Ravens. And the Patriots really couldn't get anything going on offense. They had Brian Hoyer, who was starting, and then had to sub him out for Jared Stidham, who didn't really provide much of anything. Stidham had two interceptions. Brian Hoyer had an interception. So what were your main thoughts and takeaways from this game?
I hate to say it, but I feel bad for the Patriots. When you're missing that many weapons, Sony Michel, Cam Noon, honestly, I know they fell down to 2-2. I felt like the Patriots messed up against the Seahawks in that goal line. Could have easily been 3-1. Potentially,
oh, yeah.
Could have been a really nice in that football game too, but you're not going to win with Brian Hoyer. I think the Browns found that out a few years ago, and Jared Stidham, I'm sorry.
The Bears Patriots found that out too, because the Bears had Brian Hoyer.
A lot of teams, unfortunately, found out. Poor guy is a journeyman. Like, I remember he did well with the Browns. He went 3-0 at one point, but Brian Hoyer is not going to beat the Kansas City Chiefs, who I think are a really good team. Now with Mahomes, Kelsey. I could talk about the Chiefs for a while. And remember, I'm a salty 49ers fan about after that Super Bowl. but Chiefs, great team. But when you're missing Sony Michel, I know they had a – Harris did some work last night. You're going to talk about that, but you need a good quarterback to win in this league. You just can't do it with fortune with Brian Hoyer or Jared Stidham.
Yeah, one of the bright spots for the Patriots, and probably their two bright spots, where the defense pretty much held the Kansas City Chiefs in check in terms of the running game. They were held to a total of 94 rushing yards, which isn't bad to have against such a formidable team like the Chiefs. And Damian Harris, who came off the IR, this is the first action that we've seen of him all year. He had a lot of buzz in the OTAs in the offseason about maybe taking over that starting job, as this whole RB by committee thing is still going on in New England. He had 100 rushing yards. So again, bright spots take away from the Patriots. And looking back at this game, I feel like if they did have Cam Newton, this game would be a lot closer and maybe even a win for the Patriots.
I can't disagree with you there. Like, the Patriots have been in there with the Seahawks, who I'm pretty sure both of us agree are one of the best teams out there. And with the Chiefs, if Cam Newton was there, as much as I love Sony Michel, if Cam Newton was there, this could have been a really good game, a really close game, because that pick six kind of devastated the Patriots at the end. And the thing about Kansas City, I've watched a lot of Kansas City games. If you make sure that they don't have any big long throws, especially the Hill, Mecole Hardman, any of these speedsters, or even Kelsey, like, was longest play was 45 yards to Kelsey. So they kept everyone in check for the most part. They didn't even have 100 yards rushing last night total between Mahomes and the running backs. So the Patriots did their job defensively, but unfortunately, I feel like the quarterback situation kind of threw everything off.
Yeah, you can't win without like a good quarterback play. I think one of the funny things, I was listening to like a Drew Bledsoe interview, and he said that good quarterback play is kind of like good marinara sauce. Like, you can put it on anything, it'll cover up all the flaws of the dish. And I think that's what we're seeing in the NFL today, especially, and that's what we saw last night. Switching gears a little bit to the Packers, switching gears to the Falcons and Packers game, the originally scheduled Monday night game. This game wasn't close at all. Aaron Rodgers completely outdueling Matt Ryan, throws for 327 yards, four touchdowns, three touchdowns to Robert Tonyan, the backup tight end who had 98 yards and three touchdowns, with Davante Adams out, with Alan Lazard out. Those are Aaron Rodgers' two primary weapons. He was still able to find and make a star out of Robert Tonyan. And I mean, what can we say about Aaron Rodgers? He's having an amazing year this year.
Thing is, you gotta mention my guy, Jaire Alexander, because he shut down Calvin Ridley. Five targets, zero completions, 0 yards. That's Revis Island type effort. And his nickname is Primetime Jaw. And I feel like the Packers defense, they're an amazing team. But like you said, don't make Aaron Rodgers mad. You draft the quarterback in the first round when you could have given him a weapon. And Rodgers is mad, and he's out there for trying to get a second Super Bowl. It's unfortunate. He only has one Super Bowl, but the Packers are a dangerous team. I don't want to mess with them. And Falcons found out the hard way last night.
Yeah, he's definitely on a mission to light the NFL on fire, especially after that draft pick. Matt Ryan looked like a completely different quarterback than we saw last week against the Bears. Last week against the Bears, he came out, first play of the game, it was a play-action 63-yard bomb to Calvin Ridley, and the Falcons opened up the game last week with a gut punch to the Bears. This week, he looked all out of sorts. It looked like he was throwing the ball way before he had to. He was throwing it away a lot. He was checking it down a lot. He did not look good. He looked scared and he looked confused out there. And, you know, without Julio Jones, who was hampered by a hamstring injury, he had 32 yards in this game and he had to exit early. Calvin Ridley they weren't throwing the ball downfield. So with those five targets, he had one big drop, but he wasn't really getting much attention. Also due to the fine defensive play of Jaire Alexander. But this Falcons team is all out of sorts right now. I think those two brutal, crushing defeats at the hands of the Cowboys and the Bears have kind of stymied any progression that they had. They're now 0-4, and it looks like Dan Quinn, I mean, we saw Bill O'Brien was fired yesterday. Dan Quinn might be the next guy out.
It's unfortunate to say, because I didn't think Bill O'Brien would be the first domino to fall, but unfortunately Dan Quinn, I thought his time was out after last year. Like, he's known for, unfortunately, blowing big leads. No one will ever forget that Super Bowl with the Patriots. In the past 2 weeks prior to the Packers, like against the Cowboys and the Bears, like they could have easily been 2-2, 3-1. I know that's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts, but when you're 0-4, you're officially not making the playoffs. This is Dan Quinn's last year. I know Arthur Blank was unhappy with the coach staff, but anytime, you probably noticed this, Nadeem, anytime you come back and have a great win, like the way the Cowboys did, well, I guess that's probably not the best example. Anytime you have a great comeback win, the next week you do well, and the team that blew that lead, unfortunately, always loses the week after. And it seems like that's the case with the Falcons. They had no morale. It's Monday Night Football, extra preparation. Like, you only have like, what, one or two Monday Night Footballs a year, and they just laid an egg for us. I know the score is 30-16, but it wasn't close. Like you said, Packers from the get-go all the way to the end. This is an easy win for them. It's kind of sad for the Falcons to play like that, but I feel like it's come down to coaching, so I'm just waiting for Dan Quinn to get fired, like you said.
And it's kind of sad. Like, let's say Dan Quinn was to go. Looking back on his tenure in Atlanta, he kind of rejuvenated that offense. He made them pretty much a juggernaut in 2016, 2017, 2018. And the only thing that he'll have to show for it is just a dramatic loss in the Super Bowl. And now these losses against the Cowboys, the Bears, they're just looking bad. And his resume, the main takeaway from it is that he blows leads. And that's kind of sad a way to go out. But, you know, the NFL is a brutal, brutal sport. So very unforgiving are the fans in Atlanta. So those are the two Monday night games. And now we are going to do a quarter season awards. I have picks. Yusuf has picks. So the way that this is going to work is We're going to give our MVPs of the first four games, the best offense, the team with the best defense, the best defensive player, our rookies of the year, and most importantly, Yusuf, we're doing our kickers of the year so far. So without further ado, Yusuf, who's your MVP?
Honestly, my MVP, since I'm off everyone members, I'm from San Francisco. I'm a 49ers fan. Unfortunately, the people I'm rooting, my top three right now are Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. I'll throw Tom Brady in there after that amazing five touchdown game. But I have to go with Patrick Mahomes. They just seem dominant with him as a QB. I feel like they're unstoppable with Mahomes as a QB, and everyone in the NFL kind of feels that way. So I got to go with my guy, Pat Mahomes.
Your guy that broke your heart just a few months ago. Crazy. Crazy how the world has turned around on its head. My MVP, it's got to be Russell Wilson. He's already broken Peyton Manning's record for touchdowns in the first four games. He has 16 touchdowns. He's got a 75% completion percentage. He only has two interceptions. He's got a quarterback rate over the first three games of 136.7. He's lighting the world on fire. And the thing with the Seattle Seahawks is they've given up the most passing yards on defense to any team or by any team in the first 4 weeks. So he's really doing it and like carrying the load on his back. He's reminiscent of Derrick Rose in the 2010 Bulls, just carrying the entire team on his back. And then my runner up, just props got to be given here because Aaron Rodgers, like we said, is lighting the world on fire. He has also 1,200 passing yards, but he has 13 touchdowns, zero interceptions, and 71% completion percentage. That is amazing. In any stretch of it, that's just amazing to have such high numbers, to throw the ball so much. And the way that he's playing these games, like they're not close. He completely blew out, in my opinion, the New Orleans Saints. He blew out the Vikings. Those throws he made in the Vikings game were just ridiculous. And then yesterday just completely demolished the Atlanta Falcons. And he made a star out of his backup tight end, which is, I mean, only Aaron Rodgers can do. And Tom Brady in his prime could do something like that. What do you have for your best offensive team?
If I gave that to Patrick Mahomes, I'm going to give this to Aaron Rodgers. Like you just mentioned everything about Aaron Rodgers. The part I love the most is the fact he has zero interceptions. Like he's not making a mistake. Look at these passer ratings. In the past few games, 148, 125, 108, 128. You can't do any better than Aaron Rodgers. I just think Patrick Mahomes is a better dual threat quarterback, and this league is all about dual threats, so I have to give the MVP to Mahomes. But offensively, I don't want to stop this offense for the Green Bay Packers, especially with Aaron Rodgers there. Jones is their running back. They have a great working offense. Let's see what happens in the future, but I'm going with my guy, with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, the Green Bay Packers just are really just killing it on all cylinders. I mean, they have the fourth rushing offense in the league. They have the fifth passing offense in the league. That's just balance on every level. And to flip it over, like if we were to do, we said this was too early, and which is why we didn't do it. But if we were to do a team, a best team, I think it would be the Green Bay Packers. Even against the Kansas City Chiefs, I think they could be a formidable match and maybe even dethrone the Kansas City Chiefs because they're just hitting on every single side of the ball. Their secondary is playing amazing. They have a great pass rush. Their running game is working. Their passing game obviously is above and beyond most other teams. So to have this type of balance is only teams like the Bears and the 49ers could dream of. That's also my best offense. I mean, when we're looking at stats, right, we don't just take into account stats for looking at team offense, team efficiency, player efficiency. Because you look at an offense like the Dallas Cowboys, who have the most passing yards in the NFL. But I feel like a lot of those numbers are kind of false numbers due to the fact that they've been behind so much in games. They put up 39, or their defense gave up 39 points to the Atlanta Falcons. They had to come from behind and win those games. They do not get off to the best starts, and due to that fact, teams are able to run up the score on them and they're just trailing. So a lot of these numbers that Dak Prescott's putting up, he has 1,600 passing yards. He's on pace for what? 6,700 yards. I mean, those are all empty garbage time numbers, and I don't really want to take those into account due to the fact that you're not really winning those games. Like, you're looking at the Cowboys at 1-3. They should be, and really they should be 0-4, if not for one little crazy onside kick, you know? So it's difficult to take into account just the stats behind it. You have to look more beyond the numbers. And I think, again, like, we're looking at these teams, the Chiefs, the Seahawks, and the Green Bay Packers. The Seahawks aren't a bad rushing team. They're pretty much middle of the pack, but their passing offense is really efficient. They're not giving the ball away. They don't have too many turnovers, and that's what you want out of your offenses. I think right now, in after week four, we're kind of seeing the good teams, the great teams that are kind of emerging and coming out of the pack, separating themselves from all the average to good teams.
I agree, Nadim. I know since the Bills are 4-0, we've got to give some respect to Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. I didn't think that relationship was going to work, but it's working out real well. Got to give some respect to our team up north that no one really cares about. So Buffalo, but I'm glad you chose the Green Bay Packers as well. Like you said, it's not empty stats. The Packers go in there and do work, offensively and defensively. And Aaron Rodgers is just out there throwing bullets out there. Like, I didn't actually realize this until earlier. He had an 82% completion percentage last night. 82%. Like, you're lucky if, like, these quarterbacks, like, for the Jets, the Dolphins, like, all these, like, middle-of-the-pack teams are below. They're lucky their QB gets 60%. Dropping dimes, 82%.
Yeah, and we have to give love. We have to give love because this is a team that no one expected. We have to give love to the Cleveland Browns. They are the completely unbalanced but balanced team because they're so unbalanced. They're bottom, absolute dead last in passing yardage, but they are by a mile ahead of everyone else in the running game. They have 800 plus rushing yards. They had, 307 yards against the Dallas Cowboys last week. They're doing it through Chubb, Kareem Hunt. We saw Dearness Johnson. We saw Hilliard. There's so many different elements to this running game. And the thing that's working the most is they're not asking Baker to do too much. He's doing exactly what they need. And the main thing that he's doing that I'm seeing different from last year is he's limiting his forcing of the ball. He's limiting his turnovers. And that is going to make them such an efficient team if Baker can become that efficient quarterback. And, you know, through time, he'll get his passing numbers back up. But right now, they're a run-first team. Their defense leads the league in takeaways, and they're doing a great job.
I agree with you fully. And the fact that Kareem Hunt is your backup running back and currently your starting running back, that's saying a lot. Like, these guys are loaded with weapons. It's fine. It's about time for the Browns to step up. But that brings up my next point. We're talking about the best defense. And guess who the Browns are playing next week? They're playing the number one ranked Colts defense. I know the Colts had an easy schedule so far, but after 4 weeks, number one, and they're playing the Cleveland Browns. So this is the first, I wouldn't say, it's probably the second real test. They played against the Ravens, didn't do that well, but let's see what they do against the number one ranked Colts defense.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it here in Chicago just 2 days ago. The Colts came in terms of, or in front of a red hot Nick Foles, who threw 3 touchdowns in 1 quarter to lead the Bears comeback against the Falcons. We were looking for more of that same energy, that same mojo to carry into Sunday, and we got absolutely shell-shocked by the Indianapolis Colts. Their pass rush is just really, really hard to stop. I mean, the Bears' offensive line, I wouldn't say, is one of the better ones in the league, but even then, like, we had 28 rushing yards, 28 in the entire game. And the Colts bullied the Bears' offensive line. There was no push. And, you know, at the end of the day, their offense, you know, I feel like their defense really makes up for their offense. They're only going to go as far as their defense takes them. But the Indianapolis Colts are a great run defense, clearly. But also, they have a great secondary. And I think their secondary is also underrated.
They I don't know if you remember when they traded with the New York Jets. They had a lot of second round picks, and they stockpiled cornerbacks and safeties, and it's come. The fruit of their labor is showing right now. And let's throw in a couple more stats. You already mentioned the 28 rush yards, which is ridiculous. Sam Darnold in one play did double that. So 50 points allowed through four games. The fewest since 2013. You said 28 rush yards. That's the fewest since the 2009 season, where Arizona was only able to rush 28 yards. And the Colts have, the last three opponents have only scored 11 points or fewer. And remember, this is supposed to be a passing league, and you can't even put up 14 points against the Indianapolis Colts. It does help when you play the Jets, though, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think playing the Jets, I was just saying this on yesterday's show, because the Arizona Cardinals have gone through a little struggle. I think playing the Jets next weekend is going to help them kind of get back to where they've been. I think for me, the best defense that I've seen, and this is something that I had predicted earlier before the season started, just based on how the end of last year went. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are an amazing defense overall, just balance-wise, but also that front seven with TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, Devin Bush, they're scary. Bud Dupree, they're a really good front seven. They lead the league in rushing yards. They've only allowed 162 rushing yards. They're second in passing yards. And I know they haven't played four games like everyone else has, but don't tell me you're going to throw the ball all over Minkah Fitzpatrick, Joe Hayden, Terrell Edmonds. This is a team that is to be reckoned with. And Mike Hilton, I think, is one of the best slot corners in the game. Tyson Alulau is like really good in the interior in terms of the defensive line. This team is built for stopping the run. They're built for stopping the pass. And if Ben can get going, I think this team is one of the most scary teams in the league.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to that Titans Steelers game that was 3-0 versus 3-0, but fortunately it didn't work out. But the Steelers are an amazing team, because when you have Big Ben as your QB, you know you're going to do work. I know they're missing Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell. They don't need him anymore. It's when you got Big Ben. And that defense, like you said, is stacked. I love TJ Watt. I think he's amazing.
And their receiving core always just somehow, I feel like just you don those colors of the black and gold, then you're just made into a great receiver. Because you have Juju, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, James Washington. Like, always they have just a stacked receiving core somehow. And their offensive line's really good. You know, you have James Conner, you have Benny Snell, different ways, different change of pace backs, ways to go. Even Anthony McFarlane we saw last week was getting into the mix. So I think the Steelers are going to be a scary team down the line. Who do you have for your best defensive player?
Yeah, so this is a close one between TJ Watt, who we just mentioned, and Aaron Donald, but I have to go with Aaron Donald. I know it's hard to say he even had a down year. I feel like he never has a down year. He knew the double was coming, but now a double doesn't even matter. I know you look at the stats, like he only had 3.5 sacks. He only had, 13 tackles combined. But if you watch the tape speaks for itself. Aaron Donald is on a mission, causing fumbles, disruption. Like, he's a problem. Two linemen aren't enough for him. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing some triple teams. Like, he's Steph Curry about to shoot a three.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see the fact that, I mean, just 2 years ago, the Bears had traded for Khalil Mack. And we were talking about Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, the two dominant forces in the NFL. Well, guess what teams did with both of them? They doubled both of them, and Khalil Mack was completely schemed out of defensive game plans. And that was a huge plus and added bonus for opposing offenses. But Aaron Donald is just on another level. He literally just forces himself through different double teams, different schemes, and he's able to cause havoc. And even though he doesn't have the stats, maybe he doesn't have, you know, the crazy sack numbers, the crazy tackle numbers, he is such a big reason as to why the Rams win games, and such a big reason as to why that secondary is playing so good right now.
Exactly. The Rams aren't 3-1 for any reason. I feel like Aaron Donald's on a mission. He knows he's the anchor of that defense, and he's taking charge, and it's paying dividends. They're 3-1. They're second place in the division, in a hard, tough division with the Seahawks and the 49ers. And I feel like the Rams might make the playoffs thanks to Aaron Donald leading the defense.
My defensive player of the year so far in the first 4 weeks is Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns. He has 10 tackles, 3 forced fumbles, 5 sacks. And, you know, 3 forced fumbles sounds nice, but I think it's the way in which he has gotten these forced fumbles. He got a crucial forced fumble last week against the Dallas Cowboys that completely shifted the game. It was 14-7 Cowboys at that point. And he forced the fumble. The Browns got the ball back. And ever since that point in the first quarter, they had completely taken control of the game. The Browns are also leading the league in points off turnovers. And a big reason for that is Myles Garrett. He is a complete problem on the defensive end. He had a forced fumble last week against the Washington football team. And he's just someone that, again, like an Aaron Donald on the defensive line, you just have to kind of always have always be aware of. You know, even with the double teams, he swims through. The moves that he makes are really cool. I remember he had a sack against the Bengals in week 2, and he credited, it was like a Euro step move that he used to get through the defensive lineman. He credited Luka Doncic. And he's playing great ball, and he's really the leader on that defense for the Cleveland Browns, who lead the league in takeaways.
Great choice. Myles Garrett, I know he was apologetic. I'm glad he's back in the league, and I'm glad he's back into action. Like, he deserved to be the first overall pick. He's showing why, and he's back in action, and he's hungry. And like you said, the big reason why Cleveland defensively is doing amazing, and big reason why they're 3-1.
And my rookie of the year so far, so my rookie of the quarter, is CeeDee Lamb of the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, everyone knows I'm crazy about CeeDee Lamb, former Oklahoma Sooner receiver. I watched him all throughout college making plays left and right, amazing catches. But one thing that I'm really proud of is to see that his route running has really developed well. He is 13th in the league in receiving yards. He has 21 catches for 309 yards and 2 touchdowns. Last game against the Browns, he showed out, having a big game, and was mainly the biggest bright spot, I would say, for the Cowboys as a whole, and really helped have them, you know, bridge that gap and bring that comeback going. So CeeDee Lamb, my rookie of the year. Who's yours?
You do love CeeDee Lamb. I think he's a great receiver, but the rookie of the year, I think it's going to be a landslide win by Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, by far the most ready quarterback coming in. I think he's going to be absolutely amazing in the league. It's tough when your kicker doesn't help you out. It's tough when your receivers don't help you out in your offensive line. Like, he's pretty much doing all the job by himself. I know he got his first win. Pretty decent stats. What is it? Only 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Decent rating, but his completion percentage is 66%. Nothing outlandish, but you have to remember, for a quarterback, it's probably the toughest to transition to the league, especially without a training camp, preseason games, and all these other activities. But I feel like Joe Burrow's making the most of it, and I think he's gonna make a big difference for the Cincinnati Bengals. They're gonna be a force in the future, and right now, I feel like he's growing every single week and getting better and better, and I feel like he's gonna be the rookie of the year.
Yeah, I could totally see that, especially due to the fact that he's just connecting and building a rapport with his guys. I think the offensive line is feeding off of his energy and is playing much better than what they're capable of, in my opinion. He's helping Joe Mixon in the running game for sure by taking the load off of him. Teams aren't able to stack the box because they know that Joe Burrow is looking and is a ready and formidable quarterback like they haven't had in Cincinnati for quite some time. And he's building a rapport with T. Higgins. I know A.J. Green fantasy owners aren't too happy right now, but A.J. Green's old, and he's stepping aside and mentoring these younger receivers. He has a great rapport with Tyler Boyd already. But that T. Higgins and Joe Burrow relationship, I feel like, is something that we're going to come to see for a while coming down the stretch. We're looking at other rookies, looking at Justin Herbert to see he's not doing bad. And I think, you know, it's been, what, 2 starts for him, and he took the, in like a spot start, he came really close to beating the Kansas City Chiefs, and he also held the lead against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I know he faltered at the end and threw a pick to close that game, but for what he's shown and for the situation he's been put in with the injuries around to Mike Williams, now we have Austin Eckler getting injured, Justin Herbert has really shown out, and I want you to comment on that, but also comment on, what do you think that the Dolphins should do with Tua?
Justin Herbert was actually a close second for me. I know I'm going a little bit pro quarterback, but I feel like these are the game changers of their teams. And like you said, the Chargers have actually, they've had probably the most exciting four games so far. And it's all thanks to Justin Herbert. Like, he's fast. He can run, he can throw, and he's not scared of anyone. Like, the Tampa Bay game was like a perfect example. It was a back and forth game. He could throw deep, he could run, he could throw it short. He has the entire package, and I hope he does extremely well. And that's one person to mention, and I really can't wait to see Tua. I know people want him to jump in and start playing, but you have to remember, I was actually, when I was watching the Miami Dolphins and Seahawks game, looking at the score, like, oh, Seahawks probably did easily. Like, there was many chances the Dolphins could have easily taken the lead and potentially could have won this game. Kind of ruined it at the end with Russell Wilson, your MVP, throwing it deep multiple times and throwing some really nice, sharp passes. But the Dolphins were in there. The Dolphins have been really aggressive. And if you've seen Ryan Fitzpatrick play, he plays tough. He plays hard. And people love playing with those type of people. Like, he doesn't care if there's a linebacker coming in hard at your running back. He's going to be the one blocking for that running back. He doesn't care if it's 6 yards that you need and he has to go through six defenders. He'll pile it on. He could become your running back. He can become your quarterback. And he's just a tough dude that just wants the ball out. So that's the problem is when you have someone like that in your team captain, you can't just throw him in the back seat just because his entire team isn't performing and throw Tua in there. Trust me, I want to see Tua, but I feel like it's still Fitzpatrick's team. And the Dolphins, you have to remember, look at all those draft picks that they had. More than half this team is different. They got the most free agent signings. They had, 11 draft picks coming in? When you don't have preseason games, you're missing time out. It's difficult to transition everyone in. And same with Tua. It's difficult. So the fact that Herbert and Burrow are doing well is amazing, but you got to play it safe with Tua. Especially when Fitzpatrick isn't doing bad. I feel like he's doing good, not great.
Yeah, he's like doing formidable. And I think the thing with Tua is he's still coming off that hip injury and it's really dangerous to rush him in. But a lot of media outlets, a lot of Dolphins fans, after seeing Burrow and Herbert, are kind of influenced and want inspired to have Tua in to see what he can do. But I agree with what you're saying. Like, wait for him to kind of be ready to come in and let Fitzpatrick kind of do his thing, because right now I don't think is the best time for the Dolphins to put Tua in, especially due to the fact that they're not going to be winning games. You don't want to put him in a scenario like a Josh Rosen, where you're putting him into a system and a scenario that's not really working, and then, you know, his confidence drops off or something. So I feel like it's remained to be seen with Tua. And then finally, for our last award, we have the kicker of the year, and my kicker of the year is going to go to Colts kicker Rodrigo Blankenship with the big glasses, hailing from the University of Georgia. This is such a weird kicker year because we've seen the worst kicker play I can remember, but Rodrigo Blankenship is doing his thing. He went 12 for 14 on field goals this year. That's a great number. And I mean, Philip Rivers isn't going to throw many touchdowns, but he is going to get the ball downfield, and he is going to get your team moving in the right direction, which leads to many field goals. And I think that Rodrigo Blankenship has done a great job for what he's been asked to do so far.
See, I can't disagree with that. I feel like he just chose him because his name's really cool and the glasses, but you need to judge. I got Greg Zuerlein just because, like you said, the Cowboys are pouring it on offense, just points after points after points. I know most of it's garbage time points. That's why I can't have the Cowboys beating the best offense or Dak Prescott up there or talk about Zeke. But Greg Zuerlein, he's doing his job. He's going in there. He's making all those field goals. He's not as cool as Mr. Rodrigo, but I got Greg Zuerlein. I know I could count on him.
And the onside kick, probably the greatest onside kick we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. I mean, that was just amazing.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that one up because that was the Falcons' fault. Like, you could get the ball before 10 yards, but hey, Greg Zuerlein, the magician, got him a free win. He got that onside kick, winning field goal, and that's all you need. That's their only win, too.
That's all they need. And that wraps up pretty much the seasonal or the quarter season awards. Thanks, Yusuf, so much for coming on. You can find Yusuf at Dr. Yusuf at on Instagram. And as always, follow the show at 23 is a mic on Instagram and Twitter. And you can find me at NadeemN22 on Instagram. Yeah, thanks, Yusuf, so much for coming on.
I appreciate you having me on. This was a blast. Thanks a lot for letting me pick Greg Zuerlein as my kicker. And can't wait to come back soon.
Yeah, we'll definitely have you on soon. All right, thank you everybody for listening. Let's go Padres and Braves today, hopefully. And yeah, thank you so much again. And this is 23's The Mic. We love you guys.